Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, and happy pre-election night to those of you tuning in with us from the United States. We're so happy to have you here today, and, you know, this is meant to be a nonpartisan show where we come together and we just kind of come together and talk about, hey, how can we live our best lives? How can we find fulfillment in all that we do? And today is going to be no different with my fabulous co-host, Brandon Maslin, and our guest, Patty Dingle, who we'll introduce you to here in a moment. But before I hand it over to Brandon to introduce Patty, I want to first thank our sponsors, the people over at Markham Search LLC. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, including executive search, temporary placement, and payrolling services. So thanks so much. It's a pleasure to have you here on the show. I know it's been a charged day. We were all just laughing before we went live and said, oi, what a day. So Brandon, with that note, I'll hand it over to you, my friend.
Yeah, there's like, I feel like just a collective exhaustion going on. So we all got some tea and some coffee and we'll bring up the energy as best we can. Jennifer, you and I talked about what we wanted to talk about this month, regardless of the side of the aisle that people fall on these days. There is some divisiveness in this country, if not the world. And one of the things that I've come to really understand in my work in diversity and inclusion is that diversity is life. Without diversity, we don't have life. It doesn't exist. And I know that's very scientific, but that's just how the way the world works, is that we need diversity to exist. And I believe that we need that in our society and we need that in our companies. Mm-hmm. And Patty Dingle, who's joining us today, is someone who's devoted her life to that. She's probably led a life of that. And she'll give you a little bit of her personal story as we get into today. I had the joy and luckiness of meeting Patty years ago. Funny enough, we're going to back-to-back guests from an event I met from the same event, which was the Better Man Conference. And me and Patty first met. And I'd gone to the event. It was very uncomfortable for me because as a feminist, I was so used to being the only guy. And this was a room of just, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of men. And there was Patty and another woman sitting at a table. And I was like, this is my tribe. So I sat down, and it's not just Patty was welcoming, is that she was authentic. She was direct. She was her, as I've come to know. And not only am I lucky enough to have collaborated with Patty over the years, but I do consider her a dear friend. So thank you, my friend, for being and joining us today. Oh, I truly appreciate
it. My pleasure. Yeah. As I say, anything for you, B.
All right. We once saw each other. I love Patty so much. We realized we were in a setting of like professionalism. So I went in for a hug. Then it was a handshake. Then she turned into like us slapping each other in the back. But luckily, we don't have to have that virtually. So right. Let me tell you a little bit about Patty, because I think she's worth celebrating. Currently, she's the head of diversity and inclusion at Americas at BNY Mellon. Previously, and when I first met her, she was at Visa. She started as a director. She had a brief stint at senior director of diversity and inclusion at Workday, or director of belonging and diversity, I'm sorry, at Workday, and then went back to Visa as a senior director of diversity and inclusion as well. So she's been in a few other places. You can talk about CSAA insurance as well. She's on more boards than I can tell you, from STEM to women's shelters. I think my favorite, though, is an organization that promotes Hawaiian culture through hula dancing. I mean, yeah. That alone makes Patty's had so many lives and iterations of who she is. And I think what I love about her, though, is as much as we talk about diversity and the differentials, the thing that I appreciate so much about Patty and means so much to me is she's always consistently her. Wherever mm-hmm. she goes, wherever she is. Whether an organization or a Hulu organization can handle that, that's up to them. But Patty, you're going to get that version of Patty no matter what. Yeah. And we're going to talk about authentic leadership later in the month, but Patty Dingle exemplifies it, which is the idea of know your values, stay true to those values, and lift up the collective, especially when it's easier not to. And Patty, my dear friend, I think you do that as well as anyone I've ever known.
Thank you.
So I'm going to turn it over to you. Maybe you could talk about, I hate to say why you're passionate about this field, but maybe I didn't want to give the whole life story. You know, anything you think that's relevant so the audience gets to better know you.
Yeah, I mean, Brandon, you said it, it's life, right? And frankly, I didn't realize that I was really kind of molded to do this job based on my life experience, right? I grew up in a small town, Seaside, California, it's about 5 minutes north of Monterey. Monterey is just about north of Carmel and Pebble Beach. If you know the area, very affluent to be called. He didn't want to be called African-American. And so I honor my dad by taking on that identity. But visually, sometimes that doesn't make sense for people. So a lot of assumptions are made about me all the time. I was lucky enough to be a college athlete. I went to school. I played softball. I went to San Francisco State. I have a broadcasting degree. It's probably one of the better schools to get that degree in. And I started working at ABC Television in the Bay Area, and I worked in public affairs. And when you work in public affairs, you service the marginalized communities surrounding where you work. And little did I know that that was really providing me with the perspective to do this work. I went to a small Asian language station. It just increased my acumen tenfold when I went to this station and worked there because, again, the woman who founded this station wanted to give a voice to the Asian community in the Bay Area. And she was like a cute little white lady from Ohio, you know? And you have to really admire that. And frankly, television became a little bit much for me, a little bit too stressful. And ended up at AAA, where I was reunited with someone that I had admired for a long time, a Latina. I've always had strong women of color as my leaders in my life. Did a lot of work there at CSAA. Went to Visa, again, another strong woman of color. Left for a minute, went to Workday, and came back to Visa. And this is about, like, you know, get yourself the job, right? So we're going to talk about that because I have a common thread on how I got all of these jobs that I just can't wait to share that with you.
I mean, why wait, right?
Yeah, I'm like, let's dive into it. Yeah. That's why we're here.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, I think access is key, right? Who you know, what you know, who you meet along the way. I'm here because I know Brandon, right? And we always have to pay it forward. We always have to look out for each other. So let's rewind the tape a little bit. I started at ABC in San Francisco, KGO Television, 4 days after I graduated from college, because my dad was the maintenance guy in the building that the Western Division president of ABC worked at.
Wow.
I said, Dad, hey, come on, Dad, you know, hook me up. My dad talked to this guy. My dad was well-liked, you know. And next thing you know, I'm meeting with the general manager at ABC and I have a job. And what I tell people is people might think, oh, that's not fair. You knew someone. But you know what? I had to do the work, right? I had to do the work. And then I created a reputation for myself that I knew what I was doing, et cetera. And then lo and behold, I have, pardon me, my puppy is barking.
Feel free to invite your puppy into the interview.
Working from home, right? So, you know, I had two bosses, a Latina and a Chinese American woman who really just took me under their wings and taught me everything that they knew. They gave me all these great assignments. And like I said, I went to a smaller television station and I went to the smaller television station because these women that I was reporting to, I was like, they're not going anywhere. They had already been there for 20 years. Let me move on. Well, lo and behold, a year after I left, the top person went to CSAA. See where I'm getting at, right? So when I decided to leave television, we kept in touch. kept the relationship strong. She became my mentor. And ultimately, I had a chance to go to CSAA because she says, hey, listen, I have this role I think you'd be great for. But again, I got the job. You know, I interviewed with folks. I was confident, but I did the work, right? Ended up doing the work. And then ultimately building a reputation with people that I was working with, other executives. I was very lucky. I had exposure to executives very early on. And then at one point, a friend who I was working with, diversity and inclusion, we all know each other. She goes, hey, I heard that Visa just announced a CDO and they're looking for someone. You know, give her a call. I already gave her your name. Okay. See? So you just pass it on. You pass it on. However, every job I left, I referred my backfill. So it's just this a constant paying it back, right? Especially as a woman of color. I think you really have to do that. You have to be intentional about it. Hey, white guys have been doing it for a long time. That's why the C-suite looks the way it does. We have to do the same thing, right? And again, you're doing the work. So no one can say that, you know, you're not qualified or anything like that. What did I do? I gave you access. These people gave me access, right? So I landed the job at Visa. I had an opportunity to stand up diversity at Workday, and it didn't work for me. It was not, as Brandon said, my values were not aligned with the organization. I was ready to leave and be a barista at Starbucks. There's nothing wrong with that, by the way, but I was going to do whatever it took, right? Because I was unhappy, right? And at that stage in my career, I was not willing to work somewhere where I was unhappy. It literally felt like swimming through mud every time I woke up in the morning. And this was my closing line when my exit interview. I literally said that. I feel like I'm swimming through mud as I'm trying to get to this job, right? Luckily, I had a chance to go back to Visa. Why? I kept in touch with my boss there. We were really close. Pattern, right? She became my mentor as well. So I had a chance to go back. And I chose to leave Visa because the job at BNY is a bigger job. It's where I feel I need to be in my career. And so it's been about 2 months and I'm still figuring things out. But I frankly, you could probably guess that the person that I'm aligned with at BNY was the person I was aligned with at Visa. So here you go, right? And here I am today. And I couldn't be more thankful. But again, I did the work. I did the work well. People got to know me. I created a reputation. And then therefore people looked out for me, frankly.
There's something you said that was important because I remember just, you know, because you talked about Workday and your experience there. So it's not about Workday, but I remember seeing you there. And there's a word that comes to mind for the great leaders, which you are, that I know, which is this idea of spark. I love the idea of a spark, you know, in a good way, that spark something up, to spark the engine up, to spark anything. It's the ignition, you know, that, and I remember seeing you there as a version of Patty, right? I just had never, you know, and we're close enough that you pulled me aside and, you know, I think we were celebrating a good personal thing in your life. And there was a spark. And I was like, oh, there's Patty still in there. We were talking about your personal life and some great stuff over that. But like, otherwise, it had gone out a little bit, right? Or it'd been diminished, whatever we used the mud. I'm wondering if you could talk about the importance of, especially in the diversity, inclusion, belonging space, ensuring that as a leader, you are sparked up and that you can inspire or spark up others.
I mean, this work is very dependent on other people. You know, like I can go out there and talk and inspire, which hopefully I do, and motivate and all of these things. But if someone doesn't take that and drive it, it kind of fizzles out, right? And it's by the people that are going to like take the work, you know, pull it along, or even notice when, hey, you know, I'm new at this company, right? So people saying, hey, you might want to think about this, or telling me like this, the code in the language, what does that mean? Or someone who notices that you're new and like, hold on, folks, slow down. We're using too many acronyms here. Patty's new, right? Mm-hmm. So you got to find your tribe, got to find your tribe. And frankly, I had a tribe at Workday. It was too small, you know, and frankly, the people that were my tribe there, we're like close friends right now. So I gained a lot from that, from being there. So this whole spark, listen, I feel like I always have this kind of spark. It's just a matter of what level it's at, right? But you know, when you meet someone that is there not to put it out,
yeah,
but it's there to like magnify it,
yeah,
man, I'll latch on to you and I won't let go, right? So I think identifying that is really critical. And knowing when you're impacting someone negatively or positively, right? We should be so acutely aware of how we show up in a room and the impact we're having on the room so that we can adjust and pivot, right? So if someone's spark is low, mine is high, I'm gonna try to get you there. If mine is low, yours is high, I actually want you to help me get there too, right? So I hopefully that answered your question.
No, it does. It's beautiful.
You know, it's a choice, you know, every day to wake up and have a selection, and I got my phone bank information ready to go, right?
Yeah. I mean, I would love to know, Patty, it's such an interesting concept. What you're doing is so important of giving everybody a seat at the table. And like you said, you know, white men have been doing it forever, bringing people into the seat and referring back into the roles. If you're working at an organization and maybe you're not in a D&I role, but you notice that there's something missing. There's a sense of diversity. There's something clearly missing in your organization. How can you, not being a D&I person in your organization, advocate for and bring in a team, bring the highest and best caliber of worker to the team in a loving, supportive way, and to, you know, blow on that spark within the organization?
Yeah, I think if you're at the table, you're not a D&I person, you're a P&L person, probably have the most influence in the room in general.
For 1 second, Patty, it's so funny. I just realized we were talking about acronyms and I want to honor and respect No D&I or P&L. So if you could just define both of those just so people know and they feel included.
Totally. Diversity and inclusion, profit and loss.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. So profit and loss is, you know, you're part of the business where you're bringing in the money, you know, sales, what have you. And in corporations, people in those roles have a lot of power, right? So if you're in one of those roles, I think the best way to introduce inclusion or to even amplify it in the room is that you always think about who's missing, right? Because inclusion is not literal, right? It's not every single person at the table, but it's knowing when something is missing, right? Who's missing from this conversation? Who's going to get really pissed off that we're making this decision, right? Mm-hmm. Who would really be an ally around this decision? Who would push back? Who needs influencing, right? And if you think like that, then you're actually being inclusive, right? So, and that's just a little kind of tip that I like to tell people when they say, oh, what can I do, right? What can I do? Also assigning a devil's advocate in the room, right? To point out what you just did, Jennifer, so great. It's like the acronyms, hold on, right? Let's point out the acronyms, or, hey, let's remember this or let's remember that. And it should not be the person that has the highest title in the room, you know, like kind of share that responsibility because you know why? Because different people in a room, different person. I mean, inclusion is a competency, right? You just got to practice it.
Got to flex that muscle. You got to flex that inclusion muscle and know that it's going to take some breaking down to build it up. And it's going to take hard work to think differently about things.
Right.
And sometimes one of my favorite concepts that I learned from a woman named Alison Armstrong is the idea of positive resistance. So if you have somebody over here who has a totally divergent opinion from you, and you have this opinion. It's their job to help shape you as a better leader, employee, et cetera, to say, hey, did you consider we shouldn't be using acronyms? Or did you consider, you know, that this person might be upset if they were a fly on the wall? And another teacher of mine once said, if 7 billion people were about to watch you make this choice, how do you think they would respond? Happy with the choice that you just made.
Yeah, exactly. I love appreciative inquiry too. Oh, you know, tell me about what you understand that as, because a lot of times people just shut down and they don't ask those questions, right? But the key, the environment has to be safe to do all of those things. If someone is not feeling safe, then it's not going to happen. So for example, I'm new, all these acronyms flying around, I might not say anything because why? I don't want to come off as looking like dumb, you know, or not knowing what's going on, right? I don't want to seem like the newbie, right? So being an inclusive leader is also knowing how to create a safe environment too.
I love that, Patty. That's something that is near and dear to my heart. And, you know, you and I have been in enough rooms where we're in the front of the room. And we've been in enough rooms that are safe, and we've been in enough rooms that are unsafe to know the difference in the audience. And you can feel it. It's something you can, you talk about the tonal awareness of what's going on in the room when you walk in.
Yeah.
You know, we know this is, we know this in relationships, we know this in life. You know, we walk, there's just that moment where it's just something's not right.
Yeah.
So I do a lot of work on the culture end, right? You know, I'll talk to the leadership and, you know, I work with a lot of leaders, you know, and we'll work on our values of the organization, of the entity. And if you own a great set of values, and I still believe in trickle down inspiration, it comes from the top. What can individuals or leaders do to create safer environments where all voices are heard?
Yeah. I think leaders need to be vulnerable. And one way to do that is to admit when you make a mistake. I will never forget, and I will protect the innocent by not naming their names. A very high level person at a company I was at a town hall, literally got up in the room and said, "We lost that deal because of me. I didn't think it was worth it. I didn't listen. We lost," and it was a big deal. And he was like. And so I use that as an example because people are kind of like, wow, if that leader can admit they made a mistake in front of everybody, maybe it's okay for me, right? But what we do at companies is we say, fail forward, fail fast. Can people really do that? If you're saying that, but you don't mean it, you're not creating a safe environment. If you're just using cliches, right? Listening is hard. And a diversity and inclusion practitioner years and years ago said, "Patty, I'm going to share a trick with you." She goes, "Just tell yourself in your mind, listen to everyone as if they were wise." It doesn't matter what's coming out of their mouth, but it causes you to focus, right? And then you got to share the credit, right? Like leaders have access to certain meetings that maybe I wouldn't have access to. But then someone comes out of the meeting and goes, "Hey, you know, Brandon had your back in there. He mentioned that you did this great project." Share that credit, right? But what do leaders do? Oh, people are the most important part of the company. Well, if you don't talk about the people and you don't uplift your people, then you're not really being honest, right? I mean, and language matters too. You know, you have to really do what you say you're going to do. So I think those are the three really key things is admitting when you make a mistake, sharing the credit, and listening.
Yeah, my teachers about listening that I find very valuable in business. One is in order to practice not trying to respond to what somebody's going to say next, imagine visualizing the words that somebody else is saying as they're being spoken. And this is a concept from one of my teachers, Arthur Samuel Joseph. And to even see the words as you're saying them, imagine it's running like on a little ticker or in, you know, in a translation or something under the screen. And it causes you to be very aware, is what I'm saying, what I'm committed to? And what is this other person saying that I could actually respond to in a meaningful way rather than just sitting there trying to formulate my response?
Yeah.
And a book on this, one of my friends, Dr. Mark Golston, who it is literally the top book in the world on listening, called Just Listen. We can all learn how to just listen. We can transform our lives and not only become great leaders and advocates, but become great human beings.
Yeah. I love that. Listening is hard. Because we're always like, what are we going to say? You know, I have a rebuttal for that, you know? And then you're doing like the Brandon thing. You're like, oh, hold on, wait a minute, you know? So thank you for that. I will use that too.
The Brandon thing.
Or like, you know, the person's always in the room trying to like raise their hand and they're like, and people just keep talking, you know?
I love it. Keep talking. No, this is ironically, I want to talk about listening. So it's ironic. I think interesting to talk about how important is diversity. How much the voices that aren't heard. I posted this thing today that I found that I just fell in love with, which is diversity is having a seat at the table. Inclusion is having a voice, and belonging is having that voice heard. Mm. And the importance of individuals and organizations to ensure that people have seats, that their voices are heard, all that. In the work I do in coaching, ironically, we talk about the three levels of listening, at least the way I was trained, which is Coaches Training Institute, the coactive model, which is level one is exactly what Patty said, which I'm memorable at. Yeah, great. I just want to say my thing. Level two is that we're in it. You know, you find your tribe. And level three is you're just listening to what the person's saying, not the words, but the how, the why. What are they not saying? I mean, it's the global, we call it in the way I was in CTI, they call it the global listening. Patty, I want to switch gears for one second here, because I think it's really important that we talk so much on the show about how to get the great job. We've been talking a lot about how to be a great leader. Yeah. I'd like to maybe if you could talk about how do you lose a job? And I want that because I do want to point out that if you are not an inclusive leader or someone who embraces diversity, is there a trend? I know it hasn't historically been this way, but is there a trend now in companies to, I don't want to say root out, but to say in the absence of inclusivity, you know, you may find yourself excluded?
So there's this thing I used to say, you don't want to exclude but for sake of including, right? And essentially, what do we always hear? We hear that there's a focus on gender. There's a focus on folks say underrepresented sometimes, but it's really Black and Latinx populations for the most part, right? Or someone said to me, overlooked communities, which I love. You, as a diversity and inclusion practitioner, you always have to reiterate that diversity is inclusive, right? It's just that the equity part that comes in influences where you focus, right? So I'll give you an example. Whenever I'm talking to, I don't know, just to say a group of leaders, when I talk about ethnicity, I do mention Black and Latinx, right? But I also talk about people who are European descent, things like that, right? So I think you constantly have to do that because I think we miss that sometimes. Mm-hmm. We weren't talking about mental health 3 years ago or 4 years ago. You also have to balance, like you don't want to be this potpourri of everything. Because there is a reason why we have a focus the way we do. But no one should ever feel excluded when you're talking about diversity and inclusion, ever. So it's kind of, I think, Brandon, you're talking about the losing the job, right? I mean, it takes an incredible amount of I think, awareness to be able to pivot depending on who's in the room or who's listening, right? Listen, we have people always say, oh, show up as your authentic self. I have 100 authentic selves, right? And I tell people all the time, the Patty on Sunday, you don't want to show up to work on Monday, right? But think about that. Think about how we navigate the different groups that we're around, right? I'm different with the two of you versus my family versus the neighborhood versus like the girlfriends that I've had for 12 years that we affectionately call cha-cha girls. Like even your vernacular changes, right? So knowing that, I think makes you smart because people take that authentic self piece literally sometimes. Mm. No. You don't, like Patricia is my alter ego. Patricia's not showing up to work on Monday. No, I'll lose my job maybe, right? So but you know, it's, you're not selling out. You're not doing any of that. You're just navigating, right? You're navigating. So inclusion, and Brandon, I want to add on to, you said like belonging is your voice being heard. I want to add, not only is it heard, they hear you, but I may not value what you're saying. So take it up just a little bit and value what people are saying, right? So I digressed a little bit.
That was great.
But it's really important to me because we could say diversity, inclusion, equity, belonging, all these things, but ultimately all of it requires being humanly respectful. And I have to give my guy, Steve Honnemer, credit for teaching me that 20 years ago. Sorry, Jennifer, go ahead.
No, it's okay. I really would love to know your thoughts, particularly on this, Patty. I remember many years ago, I was interviewing an expert. It may have been a D&I expert. And we were talking about the idea, you know, there's obviously been rampant discrimination based on names, based on color. Yeah. And one of the ideas that was put forth is that perhaps one day, you know, I know in orchestras, this became a thing years ago, where the musician is not visible to the people who are selecting people for the orchestra. All they can hear is the melody of their music and whether this person is going to be in synchronicity with the overall orchestra. Mm-hmm. And when the person first brought this to my attention, I thought, what an incredible idea to bring this same idea of almost blind interviewing, where you bring a team member in. So it becomes less about, oh, I want to have this ethnicity or this type of person on the team. It's about kind of even using like a voice magnifying or a voice augmenting machine. Mm-hmm. So to make any judgments, all you're figuring out is the essence of who this human being is the right essence for our team, irrespective of any race or any sort of background. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So the symphony, right? Yes. They did it. I think of the Boston Symphony. I think they had a curtain, someone played. They realized they had to put a carpet down because people were determining gender based on the sound of the shoes. And I was watching The Voice the other night.
Oh, I love that.
A contestant walked on and I think one of the judges said, oh, that's a woman because of the sound of her shoes. But what the symphony did was that they stacked the deck, right? They had more women auditioning behind that curtain walking on the carpet than they ever had before, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to bring in the talent as well, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to cast the net wide enough. Do I like blind resumes? No, because you have to take everything off. You have to take off schools. You have to take off names. You have to take off addresses. You have to take off, pardon me, it's dinner time for them.
You got to love out of background check.
You have to take off time spent at jobs sometimes. So what does that leave you with? You should probably just have skill sets on the resume, right? I mean, think about it, right? I could determine a lot. Brandon read my bio. He knew what boards I was on. 90% of the boards I was on focus on the Asian community. One might assume I'm Asian, right? So how blind is the blind resume, My thing is stack the deck, cast the net wide, make sure your interview slates are diverse. Either you have 2 or 20%, whichever is greater, because one doesn't work. And don't bunch everybody into one category. Don't say diverse. Say women, say Black, say Latinx, say Asian. Wherever your gaps are, name it and go get it. Be intentional. Be deliberate about it. Partner with organizations, right? Because you'll have people that say, I can't find the talent. They don't exist. We all know someone, a CEO said that recently, right? He just didn't know where to go get them.
Got it.
Now, it's hard too, because top Black talent, and that's a microaggression. Sorry, I shouldn't say top Black talent. Black talent that you want to come to your firm, they're probably working somewhere. So what are you doing to be the differentiator to lure them over? Get to know them, right? So there's all, I think the blind resume concept is great, but in reality, are there other ways that you can achieve that objective instead of like making it a blind resume? So the symphony though, that makes sense, right? It's music, it's all of these things, but talking about one that has all of these requirements, or are they preferred, right? So that's a bias too.
What can organizations do to attract that talent? You mentioned, I'm asking, what can they do?
Yeah, I mean, it's your branding. I mean, listen, I work for a bank, you know, people might automatically have a bias against a bank, you know, it's old bank, it must be buttoned up in blue suits and white shirts. And it's not like that at all. But we have to tell our story. And we're going to start doing that, telling our story, right? I think that looking at online reviews is really important. You can go on the website, but keep in mind, the company wrote the words that are on the website. So they're going to say what they think you want to hear or read. Talk to people who work there. I mean, I've had people on LinkedIn go, hey, and I don't know them. They're like, hey, I saw this job. Can you give me some insight? Like, do your homework, do your research, because the last thing you want to do is end up at a company that's not aligned with your values. You know, that's not going to help you achieve your career goals. And you're not going to find that out from the interviewing or from the website, because in interviews, people will tell you what you want to hear too, right? Because they, keep in mind, they approached you, so they want you. You don't need them. They want you.
A good cold hard question to ask. I think it was the old VP or executive at Pinkberry, the ice cream company, told me one time in a meeting. He said, you know, one of my favorite questions I was ever asked in an interview is just give me three words to describe your company culture. And one of two things is going to happen. Either one, the person might be like, oh, I don't know. And then they have no idea what the company culture and values are. Or two, they might just boom, 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 list the company values. Or the third thing actually that might happen is they might just authentically go, okay, you know why, and here's why it matters to me. Mm-hmm. And I think it really is telling of how a company responds to that question. Just boom, what are your three values? You know, what are the three words that you would describe to describe this company? And ask different executives that, and then notice if there's any disparity between what the executives tell you, or if there's consistency, because that's how you can tell. People are giving, they actually believe this. This is the heart of the organization.
That's great. Also, like, you can ask why that person chose to come and work for the company.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm. I love that.
Patty, parting wisdom.
You know what? I think confidence is really critical. You know, prepare yourself. If you want to get that job, prepare, over-prepare. Know every single thing about that company through the website, through Glassdoor, through Line, through network tools to do that, right? Reach out to folks, I think. And then when you show up, you know, think about how they're going to benefit from having you, right? And my analogy is this. You take a top, I'm a basketball fan. You take a top basketball player, right? And when they leave like the winning team, you kind of go, oh my gosh, why did that basketball player go to that horrible team? Why? Because they know they're going to make that team better. Why would they go to a winning team? right? So I want to go to a place where I can make an impact, where I can help them be better. So those are my, my, I don't know if they're what words of wisdom, but that's the last thing I'll have to say.
By the way, what are your dogs' names? So, because they've participated.
Well, there's Julio is back there. Scoshi was the barker.
So cute. You got to love that. I love the human aspect of how this has all kind of come together. Yeah. Is that you have your kids, in some people's cases, you have pets. It's like, hey, us as human beings, and we're getting a glimpse into people's real lives. And I think it makes us all more human. And before you go, Patty, one thing I just wanted to leave everybody with today, too, is that I loved how you began today about reputation. Ironically, just you and I didn't know we were going to talk about this. You said it was your reputation and backfilling the orders and always making sure you supported your teams wherever you left, that they were set up for success.
Right.
And just randomly, I posted a video about how important is our reputation, our references. And it's everything. I know this is a show on diversity and inclusion, but I would be remiss if we didn't highlight that, because I thought it was such a poignant beginning to the show, how you really said everything was because even your dad's reputation.
Yeah.
That dad's good reputation that was able to get you your first job, which trajectory-wise has now led you to all these incredible things. So never underestimate the power that every choice you make to lift another up or put another down contributes to how people are going to think of you 5 minutes, 5 years, 15 years down the road.
Yeah, thank you for that. Thank you, because my dad was everything to me. And he was the kind of guy, as a Black man, he never left the house dressed down, never wore a pair of jeans in his life, never gave anyone a reason to think of him as less than. I think that's really important. It was a cultural thing that was embedded in me. And also this idea of you never know who's watching and you never know who's listening.
Exactly.
So yeah.
I was really touched by that.
Thank you. Oh, it's fun.
I so appreciate you, my friend. I really, you know that sincerely.
Yeah. Hopefully we can hug in person soon, B.
I hope so. You know it.
All right, thank you again, thank you so much, bye-bye.
Thank you too to all the people who have been joining us. You know, some of you are tuning in on Facebook right now, Jean Jewell, Allison Martinez. In future shows, we'll actually ask your opinion and have you put some questions and comments in there. And then we can ask the guests the questions and comments you might have. So thank you to everybody who's been along this journey with us today. Brandon, my friend, the three takeaway guys, give it to us.
Oh my God. You know, it's funny. I don't think I can do it. I have like 20, so we'll trim it down. If you join us on any of our different platforms, whether it's LA Talk Radio or Apple Podcasts, we write our three takeaways. So we'll trim these down, but I'm going to tell you everything I got right now.
Okay.
Access is key. Keep in touch, and relationships and your reputation must be strong. Pay it back. Find your tribe. It's a choice to wake up every day and choose how you are going to change the world. Environments must be safe. Leaders need to be vulnerable. Listen to everyone as if they are wise.
Mm.
Share credit and listen. We all have an inner Patricia, who is yours, but maybe you don't have them show up to work on Monday, but by all means, have them rock out on Sunday. Belonging is voices being heard and valued. God, I love that. Prepare yourself as if you want the job and you already have it, and go where you can have an impact. God, I mean, Patty Dingle is a wealth. I hear my wife behind me. I just want to say one more thing as far as amazing, inspiring humans, women. My wife just started her new job today as one of the heads of comms at DoorDash after 5 beautiful years of Pinterest. I would not be proud, inspired every day by that wonderful woman that I get to be married to, that is somehow magnificently runs companies, comms departments, and still is the most amazing wife and human and mother you could imagine. So to the inspiring woman who sparked me up, they are my calling to be a better feminist than a man. I'm grateful to Patty Dingle. She does spark up others. She has lifted me up in more ways than I can properly express in this. So I couldn't just give us three. I'm sorry, but she's a wealth. And I encourage everyone to LinkedIn with her if they're listening. She is inspiring. Patricia Dingle.
Yeah, thank you so much, Brandon. I'm so grateful to you. And I don't know about anybody else out there. I just kind of teared up as you talked about your beautiful and amazing wife, Erin, who I'm fortunate enough to know as well. Like, wouldn't we all love to have somebody who has our back in that way? And it's so funny because I think here in a couple of weeks, we're going to be doing a show. Why can't we all be allies for each other? Why can't we all, whether it's a company thing or a loved one thing, let's all lift one another up. Let's take it to the next level. Instead of putting, you know, the next time you go to speak about somebody, think about this. Ask, what is one good thing that I could share about that person? And share it. Share it in a public forum, just like Brandon just did about his extraordinary wife and his dear friend, Patty Dingle. Imagine how much, no matter what's going on in the world, elections, pandemic, et cetera, what if we took time out of our days to uplift the people who uplift us and to acknowledge the difference they make in our lives?
Beautiful. Yep. Uplifting the people who uplift us. And next week we'll have the good guys on, who are some seriously good guys, to talk about male allyship. I can't wait for that.
Awesome, Brandon. I'm so excited. And thank you to everybody who's tuning in. Again, if you want to follow me on Facebook under Jennifer K. Hill, I'm now actually adding these in watch parties on Facebook Live. So if you have questions, comments, I know Allison had shared that she was really enjoying the content today. So thanks again for the feedback on that, Allison. And share the show. You know, if you found one little nugget of value right there, feel free to share it on Facebook, share it on iTunes when it comes out tomorrow, share it on LA Talk Radio, because we do this for you. We do this because it's our heart's desire to share and uplift and inspire and help each and every one of you. Let's live our best lives. You know what? No matter what's happening in the world, let's get out of bed tomorrow and live our best lives and ask ourselves, how can we be better human beings? So thank you for joining us today. Feel free to check us out on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job or on Facebook under Get Yourself the Job.
And LinkedIn too. Patty talked about the power of LinkedIn, but we are career centric. And if you connect with me or Jennifer on LinkedIn, Maslin, M-A-S-L-A-N, follow me, connect with me. We'll do whatever we can to help you and spread the connections forward. We're here to serve the collective.
Thank you so much. It's such a joy to be here with you, my friend, and lots of love to everybody out there. Get out there, vote, no matter who your party is, make your voice heard. So wishing everybody a safe, happy, healthy rest of your election week for those of you tuning in the U.S. and whenever and wherever you might be tuning in from.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin. Only on LA Talk Radio.